Coach Bibby?
Gentlemen, you guys have a lot going on tonight to talk about, that's for sure.
Welcome to the African American Athlete Radio Show with Ricky Hampton and Michael Robertson. It is an absolute honor to have you on tonight to spend a few minutes to share all your experiences in the game of basketball with us.
I'm happy to be here with you, and it sounds like you have a very entertaining show going on this evening, and I'm happy to be a part of it. I might be the light side of the story, so I'll go first, okay?
Coach, let's get to the whole scenario of, first of all, the teams that you played for, a lot is going on with them now. So let's go to your Knicks. They're a fiasco now, but you won a championship there. Then you have the Jazz. They lost their star player. You know, now that they've removed themselves and go to Utah. And then you have the Sixers, which they've been trying to rebuild for the last few years. They seem to get their number one player hurt every year. And then, of course, your Clippers are now without Chris Paul. So how could you break that down of your ex-NBA teams?
Well, you know, you go back to the Knicks. They haven't won a championship in a long time. And, you know, they're talking about Carmelo being on the trading block, which is, you know, I hope it happens for him. I think he needs, new scenery to revive his basketball playing again and get excited about playing. I think he's fallen into a rut of losing and kind of content with that. So I hope he does get traded, and I think it would be a good thing for the Knicks, and also it would be a great thing for Carmelo as well. You look at the Jazz lose Hayward, and it just takes them right out of the play. I don't know if they can fill that void. With any other player coming in, I think they've lost Hill, who was one of their guards as well. So the Jazz look like they are going to be struggling next year. The Sixers are the up-and-coming team. I think they've been down for years and years, and they had a strategic plan to get out there and lose some games. But doing it, you know, they're going to lose some games with youth, and then they're going to win some games with youth, and they are – won 20-some games last year. So they are up on the go. And the Clippers, anytime you lose Chris Paul, you're losing one of the dominating point guards in the NBA. So obviously they will struggle a little bit until they make some adjustments with him. But, Chris Paul is just such a big-time player, and it's going to be a big loss for them. So, right. Those are the guys you try to keep around to as long as you can. But, again, as you know, and as you see, guys are moving. It happened to Kevin Durant, went to a team where he thought to win the championship. That's what these guys want to do now. They want to go to teams where they can win. They feel they can win. I mean, he was in Clipperland for 6-7 years, and nothing really happened there. So with James Harden down there and a couple other good people, he feels as though he might have a chance to make it happen there.
Well, Coach, I'm sending regards from the great Peter Vesey, sends his best wishes to you. And a good friend of this show, Coach Ray Scott, talked about you being one of the smartest players that he had come across in the game of basketball. But my question for you, so I'm sending those regards through them to you. But I would like to go back to the 76ers team you played on was actually a friend of mine, Ted the Hal McLean. But I think that 77, that was quite a collection of talent and personalities, and I love that team. Can you talk to us a little bit about the Sixer days with Dr. J and those guys?
We talk about Hound Dog first. Hound Dog was a great, great defensive player, one of the ultimate defensive players there was in the NBA. And he sold me about 10 Greyhound dogs at one time and never made it to the track. So I'm still looking for him. So if he's out there, tell him I'm looking for him. You're hunting him down, okay? it was a great team. Dr. J, George McGinnis, Doug Collins, Whirlby Free, Chocolate Thunder, the late Chocolate Thunder. There were so many great players on that team and so many different characters that we had. that was incredible. So just to go back and relive the championship game that we played against Portland, you know, we had the game won, and they end up, you know, beating us on discipline. They had more discipline than we did. We came unraveled as a team, and that's what happens. And what makes Golden State so good is that they don't unravel. They stay together as a team. They play as one. They don't have any egos on the team, and they are winning again if they keep playing the same way and thinking the same way. So, you know, Mark Jackson started it off a few years ago. He got everything in place, and Steve Kerr just came on and fine-tuned everything, and it's been a great run for them. And, you know, with Kevin Durant taking less money, I don't see any teams beating them coming up, this ball teams I've seen assemble.
So, going back to your Sixer days, you also played with a gentleman that was lesser known, but Jelly Bean Bryant. So, could you guys ever fathom that later on in life you guys would both have NBA playing sons that actually went at each other in the Western Conference?
You know, I remember when both kids were little. Jelly and I would come to the games early, and they would come and they'd just run around all over the place. And I never thought that Kobe Bryant would be Kobe Bryant or Mike Bibby would be Mike Bibby. Two kids that would be that good. You know, I would have got their autograph at that time if I had known they were going to be that good. But they were just two little guys who were running around, and, you know, Jelly Bean was a good player in his time, and he did some good things on the floor. But he was not like Kobe, and, you know, I was not like my son. So I think we gave them most of our genes to be great basketball players. But it was nice being a part of that era of seeing so many different characters that come along and play the game of basketball and played it so well.
Alrighty then.
You know, Coach, you played for the greatest coach in the history of basketball, in the great John Wooden at UCLA. You won three straight national titles there. What is it that you take away from that experience playing for Coach Wooden?
Well, you know, it's kind of what I'm doing right now, guys, with my Dribble Pro, my 3-in-1 training tool. It's a basketball of fundamentals. And that's what Coach Wooden taught. He taught fundamentals, the simple way to do things. And that's what I'm trying to do, and that's what I took from him, playing basketball the simple way. I wasn't a super talented player. I was gifted to a certain degree. But I didn't have the hops that they have now. I didn't have all the quickness that I had now. But I had good, solid, fundamental teaching. And the basketball that I invented, the 3-in-1 Dribble Pro training tool, it teaches fundamentals. And I think if kids and families could understand what basketball is all about, it's not necessarily going out and playing. Basketball is going out and knowing how to play the game the easy way. And that's what I picked up from Coach Wooden, and that's what I try to pass on to the different basketball camps that I do, the different lectures that I do. I talk a lot about fundamentals. I think we've gotten away from that. Kobe Bryant said that his last year of playing, that we've gotten away from knowing how to play the game of basketball. And we just play now, you know, everybody plays above the rim, but what kind of solid fundamentals do they have in the way of dribbling, knowing the correct way to shoot, knowing how to rebound and get in position to rebound. And that's something that I did when I invented my 3-in-1 training tool, Dribble Pro, is to teach young people how to play basketball the easy way, to go back to the grassroots of learning how to play and knowing how to play. So Coach taught me a lot, taught me how to put on my shoes correctly. You think you know how to put your shoes on correctly? There's a certain way you put on your shoes, and how many pair of socks do you wear, things like that. He taught me that I've taken and passed on to, you know, my basketball camp and passed on to my kids about playing ball.
Wow. Yeah.
All right. So, Coach, you won your championships, NBA level with the Knicks. the last one, so you do have that distinction. And then you won three NCAA titles. And then you coached two titles in the old CBA. But you and Jelly Bean also crossed paths again when you were coaching LA Sparks. So two things on that aspect. How do you feel now that the Sparks finally won it all with Candace and then, of course, my girl NECA Ogunbowale? And then how weird was it when you and Jelly Bean both went through a scenario where you were kind of estranged with both your sons, and I think things got back together for both of your parts?
Well, you know, I enjoyed coaching women. It's totally different than coaching men. You know, very, very good players, not as talented, great shooters. Great shooters understand how to play the game of basketball. When you tell them, they do exactly what you tell them to do. The guys want to go off and do something different on their own, but the women play totally different than the guys play. And I enjoy coaching that. It was a great experience for me to coach those players. And, you know, I coached Lisa Leslie, who's probably the greatest, one of the greatest players, Hall of Famers, to ever play in the WNBA. Shamika Hosclaw, who was the Michael Jordan of women's basketball. She could do so many things with the ball one-on-one, you know, behind her back, through her legs, talk trash, score. Mm-hmm. And they play well. And Jelly was my assistant coach at the time and, you know, did a great job. And we were hoping that Kobe would come to some games and bring more fans out, but he came to one game. We had a nice crowd out to that game. But Jelly was good. He went on to coach them after I left, and I think they had a pretty good season after I left there, and I went to the NBA at the time. So it was good. They've won there. They've had some good teams there. I'm trying to remember Michael, who played for the Lakers, Michael Cooper.
Michael Cooper, yes.
He's done a heck of a job and just a great coach in the WNBA. I'd like to see him get a chance to coach in the NBA. I think he's capable of doing that. I don't know if the time is passing by or not, but he's done a nice job there. You know, with my son and I, you know, we always, you know, parents have differences with kids. We've had our differences. Divorces are tough, as you know, but he and I are back together. We've been together for the last probably 15 years. People really don't know about it. I have a book that's coming out pretty soon, and I'm going to talk about that, and we haven't really talked about that too much, but we just have a great relationship. I think we're stronger than we've ever been. We talk on a daily basis. I get to see him. I get to see the grandkids a lot. So, we've had a nice bonding to get this thing back where we need to get it back to. So, it's been really good, and I'm very happy with where we are now.
That's great to hear, Coach Bibby. That's great to hear, Coach. And when you get that book done, you make sure you come back to visit us to talk about that book. And I want to learn a little more about this 3-in-1 training tool that you have going on tonight before we let you go. But Coach, you grew up in Franklinton, North Carolina, and ended up at UCLA. What was the recruiting process for a young black man in Franklinton, North Carolina? I'm sure there's Tobacco Road somewhere down in there. Did any of the ACC schools look at you? And what was your connection to getting to UCLA?
Well, you know, it was told to me that I could go to NC State, but I had to socialize at Shaw University. Shaw University and St. Augustine are two black schools across town. But that was the time. That was the time in 1968 where you had integration, segregation just coming in. So it hasn't been that long ago. We think we've made a lot of progress in this country, which we have, but it's still not where it should be at this time. Because it's been a short 50 years. So it was difficult at the time, but, you know, I had to decide if I wanted to get the education that I need to get going to UCLA and play big-time basketball. And I wanted to go where I was wanted. I remember Dean Smith.
Yes.
We played out in the Final Four in 1972, and the University of North Carolina was in the Final Four. We didn't get to play them, but he had said to me, boy, did I make a mistake not recruiting you. So, you know, I had a great career at UCLA, and if I had to do it again, I would do it the same way. And it was just been a great setting for me to be a part of, you know, three NCAA championships. And like you say, playing for the greatest coach, I think, who's ever coached the game of basketball.
Well, Coach, speaking of UCLA, you know, of course, now you've got the new star that's coming out now, Ball. But then let's go back to when you were coaching across town at USC. How awkward was that when you were coaching for USC and had to play against the Bruins?
Well, you know, a job is a job, guys. You know that. Working for one radio station or working for the others is who paying
right.
you the dollars, I guess. That's what it boils down to is, you know, I had been out of UCLA a long time, so it didn't faze me so much. I thought about it the first couple of times that I went there to coach because I do have a lot of memories and fond memories of being at UCLA. But, again, you know, my life was the kids that I had at USC, and I was committed and devoted to them to be the best coach I could be. So, you know, I thought about UCLA, but not as much as I was thinking about, you know, my players that were at USC with me who gave their heart and soul to be a Trojan. And you know, right now I'm very proud to have coached at USC because I think it's a great school to coach, and UCLA as well. But I have a lot of ties to USC right now because of what they did for me in the way of us going to the Elite Eight. They had never gone to that far in the tournament since they've been in existence, and I was happy to still have that record. I hope one day they can break that, but and I think this year they have a heck of a team they put together. A lot of veteran guys are back. They went far last year, so they could go the distance this year. I'm counting on them to do some damage in the NCAA tournament.
Coach, I just got a text message here. Kudos to Coach Vivi. I grew up watching him from UCLA on, loved him as a player. So you got a lot of fans out there tonight to still remember you, Coach. It's good to still be remembered, man.
Yeah, right. You know, I gave my heart and soul playing. You know, I was a blue-collar worker, and, you know, my whole objective was to win basketball games, to be the best basketball player I could be, to be the best team basketball player I could be, and to win. And we did a lot of winning at UCLA. So now I want to carry this on and keep winning for some other, you know, kids out there and help them be successful and meet some of the goals that they're looking at meeting.
Let me get everybody caught up, Mike.
Okay, go ahead.
You're listening to the African American Athlete Radio Show with your hosts, Ricky Hampton and Michael Robertson of the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com website. We have our guest tonight, Coach Henry Vivi, is spending a few minutes with us. Go ahead, Michael.
All right, so, Coach, speaking of writing, I wrote an article about the ABA and then also wrote about Pittsburgh and Oakland being champions. So I mentioned you in that story because your brother was a great pitcher for the Pirates. But digressing back to when you came out of UCLA, you also had a chance to go to the ABA. What made you decide NBA over ABA, and what was the scenario in that case? And then how proud of your brother when he won the World Series at the We Are Family Pirates, and you were across the way over in Philadelphia?
Well, I was happy to – I've always been happy for my brother to be successful, and, you know, he was a late bloomer. He was a late bloomer coming around pitching, and he ended up being a pretty good pitcher, pretty good pitcher. I remember Mike Smith, who played for the Phillies, was said, "Man, I've never seen anyone throw that hard." And he throws so hard, you didn't know where it was coming, but you know it was coming at 100 miles per hour. You knew that. You didn't know if it was going to come at your head, your ankles, your feet, or what. It was coming, that's for sure. So it was nice that he was able to do that with Pittsburgh. We did an article in Sports Illustrated with J.R. Richards on the cover. I'm not exactly sure what year, but we went back to Pittsburgh. We hung out together and just had a nice time. It's, you know, I sadly miss him now as he's passed on, but you know, we'll all be there at some point in time and meet again, and maybe we'll play some baseball. I know I never wanted to catch him when he wanted to, like, pitch. He would just, like, rear up and throw 100 at me, and I just – I take one shot, one pitch, and I told him I quit. That's it. And he would get mad at me every time.
But I wasn't going to stand there and take that abuse up.
Did I?
Did you play baseball growing up in high school in Franklinton?
You know, I played a little bit, but it wasn't my passion. My passion was basketball. Every chance I got, I tried to get in the gym, and I just didn't like, you know, someone throwing at me. I didn't want to hit that ball, and I didn't want the ball to hit me. So something was going to happen. Either hit me or I hit, but more than likely it was going to hit me more than I could hit the ball. So I just kind of stayed away from it, and I got out playing basketball. That was my passion.
What was your reasoning for picking the NBA over the ABA? That was the second part of the question.
Well, you know, it's everyone wants to play in the NBA. You know, I was drafted in the fourth round by the NBA, and the ABA wasn't what it was a year or two, 4 or 5 years afterwards. The money wasn't the same.
Okay.
It wasn't such a solid league at the time, but the NBA was where I wanted to go, and you know, going to the Knicks was just a great team to go to. They had won the year before with Willis Reed, I think the year before when he drug his leg out there and all that. So it was just great to choose the NBA because you know I knew it had longevity and it had more recognition than the ABA at the time.
Okay, I understand.
Coach, we've got another text question here. I'm sorry, Mike. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I said understandable. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we got a question coming in via our text line. What is your favorite Bill Walton memory?
My favorite what? Bill Walton what?
Memory.
You know, Bill and I go back so many years. Bill's just a great guy. There are really so many memories. I remember the time he came late for practice. It was during the Kent State set-in, and they were sitting in on campus, and he was late coming to practice, and, you know, he had, his headband on, and he was looking like he was ready to sit in for longer periods of time. And Coach wouldn't ask him where he'd been. He said, Coach, I've been to the sit-in. He said, well, don't you think you have practice? He said, well, I kind of forgot about practice. I think the war is a little more important than practice. So he said, Bill, if you think it is, you should go back. If you don't, then you think you should practice. So Bill ended up practicing. So obviously Coach Wood made his point to Bill that the basketball at this time and day was a little more important than him sitting in the strike on the Kent State situation.
Hey, I got a question for you, Coach. Bringing up the Kent State protest, that time, the late 60s, 70s, you know, the black athletes seem to be a lot more engaged in the issues of the day. You think about Tommy Smith and John Carlos at the Olympics and the Cleveland meeting with Kareem and Jim Brown and all those guys. And as a black athlete, do you think you guys had a responsibility that was kind of beyond the playing arena that you carry forward as professional athletes?
Well, you know, things were starting to change then. The Afro was really big. Cornrows were in big at the time. So the culture was gradually changing. You know, the Black Panthers were on campus, you know, talking about black power. Angela Davis was on campus talking about black power. So times were changing during that time, and we were starting to make adjustments and really – looking to see our identity and who we were. We were really happy with being black people at the time. You know, where before you kind of said, well, you know, it's a different world than that. But again, those people changed the whole culture of what we were looking at to you know, say, you know, I'm black and I'm proud. You know, it was that type of legacy that was coming into play during that time.
So then how was the transition then from North Carolina going out to L.A., which was considered a liberal area definitely at that time? So what was that transition like, knowing that what you couldn't do in North Carolina, you could possibly do at UCLA? And, of course, they had a legacy of black players before you got there too.
Well, you know, I came over from a very small high school, so it was a big adjustment for me. You know, I had 19 kids in my graduation class. We had 150 in my high school. We had 1,300 in my small town. So, you know, I came from a very rural area, and I moved to the metropolis of Los Angeles, you know, and didn't really know how to go to class, didn't really know how to write, you know, paragraphs and sentences and stuff like that. So it was the culture of the different food that you were eating. So, you know, so many changes were taking place in my life that, you know, I had to make the adjustment. It was a big adjustment to make, and, you know, I was able to make the adjustment with help from, you know, guys like Sidney Wicks and Curtis Rowe, who lived in Los Angeles, who kind of knew what it was all about. Andy Hill, who a family I moved in with, became very good friends of mine. So my whole dynamic, my whole life dynamics changed once I went to UCLA and met the people that I met. And it kind of shaped and molded, you know, the rest of my life for me, of who I would be and the way I would look at people.
Hmm. You know, Coach Ray Scott is a friend of our show, and he coached Curtis Rowe here in Detroit. And he talked about Curtis being one of the most underrated players that he ever had been around. And he was on a team of stars, yourself and Sidney and Walton was I don't know if he got a chance to play with Bill or not, but what was it about Curtis that made him such a player, Coach?
You know, Curtis was a super athlete, very, very talented athlete, had a funny shot but went in and knew his limits. He was the type of guy that played within the framework of him knowing how to play. Just a solid, fundamentally sound player who just did what he was supposed to do. Utilized all the talent that he had to be the great player that he was. Very, very good player, and you know, got to the NBA. I think he made the All-Star team 1 year or 2 years, but just a solid player. You know, a guy you want to play with, who's a team player, knows how to win.
So, Coach, you definitely go down in history as one of the better point guards coming out of UCLA. So when you fast forward to this year with Lonzo Ball coming out and, you know, also having a great breakthrough in the summer league, what do you think about him as a player, and what do you think will happen with him? I know it's too early to tell, but what type of player do you think he is, and are you proud to see a player of that ilk come out of UCLA as you did?
Well, you know, he's a very talented player, and he's only going to get better. Great passer, sees the floor, unselfish, works hard, plays defense, has good foot quickness, good foot movement. Shot not where it should be, but it will get better. You know, he'll get on the shooting machine, and they'll have him shoot 2,000 or 3,000 shots a day, and his shot will improve. He needs maybe just a tad bit of tweaking of it. And you're going to have a very, very good basketball player. You know, it's, you know, we don't have a crystal ball to know, you know, what will happen. But, you know, hopefully if he stays injury free, he will be something special. He looks like he's something special right now. So we'll see as we go on, you know, you know, Kobe Bryant started off. Now he didn't have a good first year starting off. Kobe shot a lot of air balls during his first year, but you know, he's with, you know, hopefully he's with the coach now who will give him an opportunity to play like Kobe got an opportunity to play, and he's just going to get better as the season go on. He's just going to be a top player once he gets into the swing and he figures out what it's all about. He's just out there playing now, but wait until he gets some maturity, some games on his belt, he'll probably be unbelievable.
Okay, let me get everybody caught up. Listening to the African-American Athlete Radio Show with Michael Robinson and Ricky Hampton and our special guest, Coach Henry Bibby. Coach, we won't keep you much longer. But I do, you talk about your 3-in-1 training program and some of the concepts you put in that from your vast experiences. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about that and how maybe they can find out more about it, if you have a website or anything going?
Yeah, there are a couple of things that I'm doing now. The first one is the Dribble Pro. You can go to dribblepro.com and find out what we're all about and get your 3-in-1 trainer tool. You're training with Henry Bibby. That's what you're doing. A regular trainer costs about $100 for an hour to get your trainer over. With this basketball, this $89.99, is created by me. It teaches you the grassroots of how to dribble, how to keep your hand on top of the basketball, how do you control the basketball, which a lot of people think they can do, but they can't do. It teaches you how to hold the basketball and shoot it the correct way. There are four nodules that are placed on the basketball, scientifically engineered on the ball that will bounce a certain way, bounce so far away from you. And when you hold it and shoot, if you have your hands on any nodules, it shows that you're shooting the basketball incorrectly. So it teaches you. It's a self-teaching tool that will teach you how to hold the basketball to shoot it to get the right rotation on the ball. It also, the last thing it does, it teaches you how to stay on the ball with your feet to rebound. The ball, if it hits one of these nodules coming off the backboard, it moves on you. So in rebounding, as you guys know, you have to go get the ball. You don't wait and let the basketball come to you. It's kind of old school, but, again, it's a self-teaching tool that you can use every day to help build confidence in you. It builds self-discipline in you. It's good physical activity for muscle, hand, eye coordination. All this goes into this basketball to help you be a better basketball player. And the last thing I'm doing, I have a nonprofit. It's called Henry Bibby Star Athletes, and this is for at-risk kids, homeless kids in the California area that I'm doing right now. There are about 2.5 million homeless kids in our United States. It's an epidemic going on that we are not even looking at anymore, and it's increased 8% since last year. So each year it's getting more and more. And, you know, 1 out of 30 American kids has been homeless at some point in time. So we have to start looking at these young people and how do we help them. So what I'm doing, we're accepting donations at henrybibbystore.org, and what we're doing, I'm putting on basketball camps. We're trying to get the kids out. We give them food. We give them activity that they play. We give them self-confidence. We give them motivation to keep going on to be successful. We do a lot with the kids when they come to the basketball camp that they've never been before. This is the first basketball camp that they've been to. We've had a few of these camps around the city of L.A., and we've had a nice turnout. We took them to one of the L.A. Clippers games. The Clippers gave us 50 tickets to bring the kids out. We thank the Clippers for doing that. And Del Taco is involved, Gatorade involved, and ASICS gave us their facility to use, which is a very, very beautiful facility in Irvine, California, that the kids can go to. The kids work out, play, have fun, and it's for boys and girls. So hopefully coming to this camp with oral hygiene that we give as well. We talked about, brushing your teeth, eating the right food, getting the proper sleep. We give them all this as much as we can that they're getting when they go back home. So I think it's a heck of a program, and I'm very proud to be a part of that. I wanted to get involved in some type of charity organization that I could give back to the youth. And this is what – no one is out there really doing anything like this. And there's just, like I said, there's so many at-risk kids out there that the epidemic just in California is taking over, and I think we have to do some about it. So I need the people's help out there to send in donations where we can get these basketball camps going. We can get these kids at these camps where we can teach them a little bit about success, what it's all about, what it feels like to be in a setting where a lot of other kids have been, go to some basketball games that they've never been, and put a smile on their face and know that they got to keep persevering. They have to keep working through things to make things happen. You fall down, you got to get back up again. So those are the two things I'm doing. And like I said, I'm writing a book about, family life, divorces and different types of family situations. And hopefully we can get all this done. And if we can reach out and help one or two people, then, I've done what I wanted to do. So that's kind of what I'm doing in a nutshell. We need the people's help out there. Like I say, if you want to learn how to be a better basketball player, Dribble Pro is what you got to have. If you want the edge, you want your kid to get the edge, then you need to get a Dribble Pro.
Outstanding.
I have to send you guys one so you guys can see what it's all about too, okay?
All right.
Okay.
And it's funny.
And what I'll do also, Coach.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Mike. I was just going to tell Coach, we'll be sure to put information on your foundation and information about the Dribble Pro on our website, theAfricanAmericanAthlete.com. So all our listeners out there, because we are a nationwide show, Coach, we got listeners from all over the country. So we'll get that up on our website as well. Go ahead, Mike.
I appreciate that. And like I said, I do want this to go nationwide because, again, it's an epidemic that we're all overlooking. These are our kids. These are our future. These are our future presidents that we're looking at here and congressmen that we're looking at. Doctors and lawyers, that's what we want them to be. Or whatever they want to be, whatever artist, rap artist, whatever. We want to help them reach their potential, and we have to start helping these young people do that.
All right. So what I was going to say is that, you mentioned about keeping your hand on top of the ball. It's amazing how these star point guards now get away with carrying the ball so much. That is ridiculous. But my questions, I had like a twofold question for you. Ice Cube, speaking of rappers, put together the 3-on-3 league, and your son is participating in that. So I was wondering, have you been watching him play? And then secondly, you talk about some of the other aspects of it. Who are the most difficult? Okay, I was going to say, who are the most difficult players for you to guard in college? And then also the same question for in the pros. And that's how I'll wrap it up for you.
Okay, of course I watched my kid play. And because he won the game the other day, he was a player of the week, the first week in the Big Three. And I think he still has it. I think a team out there could use a little bit of his skill. That's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. But he's a solid player, fundamentally sound, and can do a lot of good things out on the floor. The toughest player in college to guard was probably Freddie Boyd, who played at Oregon State years ago, and Pete Maravich, who played at LSU. Those guys were tough to guard. In the NBA, well, you can go down the line of players that are tough to guard. JoJo White with the Celtics, Walt Frazier, Earl Monroe, who I played against every day, Nate Tiny Archibald, who's with the Kings, who one of the greatest players to play, Calvin Murphy, who played with the Houston Rockets, Norm Van Leer, who's in Chicago, playing, Phil Smith, Phil Chenier, those guys were tough. They from the Bay and played the Bay Area, I believe, played with Golden State. Phil Smith, I believe, did. Phil Chenier played back with Washington. Kevin Porter, there's a numerous group of guys that were that good that play. They were so good in the NBA, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, that's a list there, Coach. I mean, that's some serious ballers back then, man. You guys really had to bring it every night back then. Because, it's a smaller league, and those names speak for themselves.
It was smaller. When I came into the NBA, there were 17 teams. We were kind of like Golden State. We had like five all-star players on the team. You know, when I was with New York,
you
start out with Earl Monroe and Walt Frazier, two Hall of Famers. Then you go Bill Bradley. Then you go Dave DeBuscher. Then you go Willis Reed. Kind of like Golden State. You know, they have so many guys that they throw at you, guys who can beat you on a given night. That's what makes them so good. They're so, you know, entwined into being that team and being consistent with what they do. They all do what they do on the floor every night, and they depend on each other. They trust each other to be able to do what they want to do. But if Steph Curry is having an off-night shooting, which he doesn't have too many of those, Kevin Durant picks it up. Or if he's having a little tough night, Klay Thompson. Or if not, then you got Draymond Green. Then you have Andre Iguodala. So you go down a line of players that can win games for you every night, and that's what we had in the Knicks, with the Knicks and all those great players.
Well, Coach, I tell you, I really appreciate you taking some time out to spend the evening with us here on the African American Athlete Radio Show. I do have one more question before I let you go. When we go, we're going to go right to our next guest, Michael Lewis Ingram, the great writer for Black Athlete Sports Network. Coach, you know, back in the day, when you were wearing your afro, a certain person might not have thought you were ready to play. I don't think you have to worry about that now. You got a new hairstyle these days. But as you look back on the business of professional sports and you see what's going on with Colin Kaepernick and all the things of that nature, and coming from the civil rights area, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's a different day and time. You know, I respect what he does. You know, this is a free country that you do what you want to do, basically. So he has a right to express how he feels, and I can't knock, you know, how he feels about something. So I'm in agreement. If that's what he wants to do, then that's, you know, and there's no penalty against it for doing it because it is a free country, then he should do it. You know, it's all right with me. I don't have a problem with the guy expressing how he feels.
Okay. Sounds good, Coach. Hey, Coach Henry Bibby, thank you so much for spending time with us tonight on the African American Athlete Radio Show. And we will get the information up about the – the 3-in-1 trainer?
3-in-1 training tool, the Dribble Pro. People can go to Dribble Pro YouTube and find it. And Henry Bibby Star Athletes is my nonprofit.
And we will get that up. You'll be able to find that. We'll post that tomorrow. And we will post that tomorrow on the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com website. Coach Bibby, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys, and have a great rest of the evening.
You too,
okay,
sir.
Okay, we'll see.
Thanks
when you get that book done, call us back.
I will do that, okay? I need some pub from you, okay?
Well,
you got
absolutely.
It, man.
No problem.
You got it.
My guys.
Right, have a great night.
You guys have a good evening. Okay.
You
thank
too.
You.
Coach.